From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of The Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Welcome to today's show. Let me tell you a little bit about it. I've already let some of you know what it's going to be about. My guest is Bob Wheeler. He's an interesting man. He's a CPA with over 25 years experience. He also does some stand-up comedy, and he's the CFO of the Comedy Store. He's traveled the world all over the globe, especially high altitudes. I guess he likes that. And today we're going to be talking about a subject most people never want to talk about, especially when they're getting married or attached to someone else, which is money. And he's got a great book out called The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. And I don't think when people think about money, they think about emotions, but I have lived it and seen it. And there's no better trigger for an argument than your differences over money. So without further ado, let me say good morning to my guest, Bob Wheeler. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good to have you. You know, I do a lot of consulting work, and I think one of the biggest problems, you know, I would say there's two in every marriage, sex and money, two things no one ever seems to want to talk about, like it's a taboo subject, or this person isn't going to love me anymore if I tell them how I was raised and how I feel about money.
Absolutely. There's so many triggers when it comes to this stuff. And I think there's also a lot of shame. A lot of people think that everybody's got it better than they do, and so they have to keep it close to their heart so that nobody finds out the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think that most people realize how emotional they can get or how tight their emotions are attached to how they look at and make their money.
I think that's true. I think many people are unconscious. I'll have people all the time say to me, I don't really have anything about around money. And then I'll talk with them for a little bit, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I do sort of get sick to my stomach when I'm freaking out when I'm refinancing a house. Oh. Or when my credit card gets declined at the store, I'm so humiliated, I want to kill somebody. Or, oh, you know, when my kids ask for a toy at the store and I just want to scream, I'm not made of money.
Right.
Those are emotional reactions.
My parents, I think their favorite one was money doesn't grow on trees.
Right.
So I never bothered looking in trees for money, although now as an adult I understand every tree on your property adds money value to your house. So maybe money does grow on trees.
It does. And, you know, I guess if you cut a tree down and make it into pulp, you could probably make some money anyway. So
right.
It's paper.
It's kind of interesting because I was reading your book, and at the time I'm reading your book, one of my good friends, she's close to 50 years old. She calls me and she's all in a panic because her 20-year-old daughter is turning in her fairly new car to buy another new car, and she was going to lease it. The mother goes into a total panic over this and asked me if I would counsel her daughter, who's sitting at the car dealership, because she says, I don't know anything about these things, and this is making me very nervous. I don't know how to react. So I call her daughter at the dealership, and I'm like, what's going on? She explains the deal she's making. The kid's doing a great job. I not only encouraged her, I congratulated her on being so gutsy and smart. And then when I talked to her mom again, I said, you know, what is it about this that made you so upset that your daughter said she had to talk to me because she didn't want to hear any more negatives on it? And it was basically because she doesn't understand it. I don't know about these things. They scare me. I, and she was freaking out. And I said to her, well, then why don't you just learn about these things? You know, to me, the kid made an excellent deal. I mean, I was proud of her.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing. A lot of people don't have the information. They've downloaded information from when they were kids, mm-hmm. and they've gone to it as if it was truth or useful instead of updating their imprint and getting a new download.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, I know you're a CPA, so your work's a little different than mine. But when I talk to people, especially couples, I would say that it's kind of amazing to me that neither one of them have ever discussed their partner's views on money. You know, what did their parents right. teach them? You know, what was their money situation growing up? Are they a spender? Are they a hoarder? And then it gets very difficult not to argue with each other because two people are coming from entirely different directions. I'm sure you see that.
I see it all the time. And when I have people coming in that say they're going to get married, we do have these kinds of conversations. I'll say you need to sit down and make a list of what you're good at with money and what you're bad at and who's going to take care of certain things and make these lists of what you're going to do and what they're going to do, and then you guys sit down with a glass of wine or orange juice or whatever, and then you talk about your lists of expectations and how you're going to handle things, and then actually have the conversations. What did your parents teach you about money? Do you like to save? Do you like to spend? Not that it's right or wrong, and don't do it with judgment, but with a curiosity mm-hmm. so that you can start to say, oh, that's where you're coming from when this starts happening, or, oh, that's where I'm coming from starts happening. So that you're not into the blame game of you're doing it when I'm doing it right. Oh, you're just doing it differently.
Right.
And something
right.
I'm not comfortable with.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because when I was married, you know, I came from a fairly poor background. And my husband also came from a poor background. He actually was way poorer than I was, which I didn't think was even a possibility at the time. And what was interesting right. was because he was so poor, he had a very hard time spending money at all. For me, yeah. it was, I want to spend some money and I want to save some money. Because I right. never had the opportunity, you know, to have more than, you know, two pairs of shoes. Do you know what I mean? And it was a source of friction because it was hard for me to understand how here we were both making a good living and he had a hard time spending 10 cents. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, you know, you're not poor yeah. anymore. You know, we can afford to go out to dinner. But I could see where his upbringing affected him really seriously in the money issue.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's so many people that grew up in the Depression era or in extreme poverty, very poor, and that imprint from childhood is so difficult to let go of for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I did have a really smart father, so I was very lucky in a lot of ways because he taught us about, you know, not using credit cards unless you can pay the bills when it gets there, how to save money, how to do a budget. You know, he didn't hesitate to sit and teach us the important things. But I look at so many people that don't have a clue. When I say to them, you know, what's your budget? They don't even understand what the word budget means.
Right.
So how do you get people to do that? How do you get people to understand living within a budget?
Well, you know, for me, when I work with people, before I even start to do that stuff, to work with them about a budget and explain all that, I want to make sure that they're committed to getting into an uncomfortable space, and are they willing to put energy and effort to learn something different? Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then I just don't go down that road with them because
right.
I don't want to waste my time.
I could totally relate to that. You know, you have a great quote in the beginning of the book. It says the real measure of wealth is how much you'd be worth if you lost all your money.
Right.
Now, for most people, I would think looking at that is almost like a mind bender, okay? You can't have any worth if you don't have any money. And I'm sure that's not what the saying means.
Yeah, and I think the majority of people would believe that they would have no worth.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that people just equate success or worth with actual money?
You know, I know, I mean, I would say, and I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's gender, but I would say I know for men, having earned or the capacity to earn, it's really tied to their masculine. There is this societal impression that's put upon men that if you can't go out and provide for a family, if you can't go out and do these things, you're less than. So I know, at least for a lot of men, there's this pressure of I've got to be smarter, I've got to be richer, I've got to be, you know, I've got to play the game, and if not, then I'm not enough. And there are certainly women out there that look to find that match with that particular man. That, you know, hey, I'm a wonderful woman. I'm going to bring all got to the table to bring the money, and you have to bring the you've got to bring the bank.
All right. Well, I would like to think that in 2014 that's kind of changed somewhat, but I do find that men identify themselves with what they do and how much money they make.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I definitely think it is changing, but I work with a lot of women, and I hear from a lot of women that it's just not going as quick as one would think, that there's still pockets of, you know, women should look for a good man who's going to bring home the bacon. Women should look for men that are going to take care of them instead of go out and be empowered in their full potential. And I hear a lot of it, and I hear more from women than I do from men.
Well, it could be because women still don't have equal pay for equal jobs. So,
correct.
You know, that could fit into it, but I would still think it's pretty old-fashioned to sit back and expect some man is going to just support you. You know, I hate to say it as a woman, but I think it's pretty old-fashioned.
It is old-fashioned, and, you know, I'll be honest, look, if somebody said, hey, all you have to do is go out and find somebody really wealthy and they'll take care of you, you don't have to do any work, that sounds good to me. It may be old-fashioned, but I'm like, I could be down with that. I think there's a part of people who don't want to really take responsibility or do the work that's really attractive.
Right. Well, yeah,
I'm not accountable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, listen, I mean, what happened to independence, okay? You know, and a lot of couples I counsel, it's like, you know, you have to realize you're a couple. It's a partnership.
Right.
It's not you're making more than
team.
He is or vice versa. It's what are you doing together as a couple? Do you have common goals, common dreams, common bills, you know? But it's,
absolutely. And
it just seems like it's so hard for people to break away from that old, you know, 1940s paradigm.
It is, and I definitely think it's shifting, and I do see people doing more work. I do workshops, one-day workshops and four-week workshops, and, you know, people are coming out, and they want to explore this, and they want to be empowered, and they want to be in control of their own destiny versus what's the universe going to bring to me, you know, because that really plays into more of a passive victim kind of role of just waiting and seeing versus, you know, taking and stepping into your power.
Right. Well, to me, it's almost a form of prostitution. But that's just my opinion. Okay. Well, that's the way I see it. You know, when I hear men complain to me, you know, I just look at them and say, hey, you know what? Your wife does all the things she's supposed to do, plus holds a job. I wouldn't mind having a wife. Okay.
But, right, exactly.
But I'm not of that persuasion, so I don't have a wife. I got to do it all.
Right.
My father used to say all the time, especially to people that he would see, you know, spending more money than they earned. And of course, I think of my first husband. My father used to tell him all the time, You want to live like a general on a private salary.
Right.
I mean, we've seen a lot of that in the United States, especially with the inflated housing boom and all the people
right.
rushing out, buying things they can't afford, you know, getting their loans, you know, equity loans against their house. It was like one big drunk party.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the media really does a disservice in that respect, because they really push people to have it now. You should have feel you're entitled to. You shouldn't have to wait. Pay later.
Right.
Feel the pleasure. And, you know, don't get bogged down with all the debts. That's, you know, you can deal with that later.
Mm-hmm.
You need to live the life you deserve.
Right, but a lot of people are in debt. I know you know because you're a CPA. They're in debt beyond their eyeballs.
Significant debt. Significant debt. And, you know, it's, but they, a lot of people, you know, I think the hardest thing with, you know, there was a commercial that basically everybody was paying, running through the line paying credit card, and it was moving so quickly, and then somebody pulled out cash and completely ruined the system because they were using cash
mm-hmm.
instead of a credit card, and everybody frowns at them. And the thing about that is, when you use a credit
Hello? Bob? Uh-oh. Hold on, everybody.
So what happens, though, is when we spend with credit cards, there's no connection between the amount on the credit card and the purchase. When I take $20 out of my wallet, I feel $20 just left my wallet.
Right.
You know, people will say, when I have a $100 bill, I don't want to break it because it just goes quicker. So we feel the impact when we're handing a currency. When we're using credit cards, it doesn't matter what they charge. All you do is just your name. You're like, oh, okay, it's mine. There's no...
Right.
Direct connection.
Until, of course, the bill arrives.
Until the bill arrives.
Right. Now, one thing that I try to explain to people is if you're going to use a credit card, make sure you have the money to pay it in full when it comes, because whatever you got on sale is going to cost you more money if you're paying 20, 30% interest on it.
Exactly.
Now, why is it that so hard for people to understand?
Because people want to live in the moment, and people don't want to, so many people don't, you know, people, my sense is a lot of people just don't want to be adults. A lot of people don't, they don't want to have to be accountable and actually think about things and look at the consequence. It's, you know, I hear when I talk to people about budgets, I say, hey, we're going to talk about budgets. People say, oh, great, restriction. I have to go without, you know, Debbie Dinger.
Right.
Just, it's like, why do you want to talk about that stuff? You're going to limit my world. And if I can just be free to just be open to anything, I can have more. And then you're going to bring in a budget and you're going to give me information that's going to destroy my dreams. So there's a negative perception that budgets and accountability, it's boring and it takes away from our ability to dream or want what we want.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which I would disagree with.
I totally disagree. I think you need to know what your bills are, how much money you make, and what's your, you know, free money at the end of that. You know, and never go over that free money because that's how it starts. You know, another thing that a lot of people probably don't do, because I've seen it several times, and to me it's horrifying, Bob. I'm with one of my friends. We go to a gas station. Everything, of course, now is you stick your card in and you pump your own gas. And he was using a debit card. And when it said, do you want a receipt, he hit the no button. Now, to me, I said to him, when you get your statement at the end of the month and you don't have these receipts, how do you even know it's the right amount or it was your credit card or whatever? And he was stunned. And this is not somebody who's a teenager. This is somebody 60 years old who couldn't see the importance of keeping receipts when you use a credit card or a debit card. How common do you think that is?
It's very common. I would say a majority of my clients do not reconcile bank accounts. They know approximately how much it's in there, and then they spend to what's in there. And I'll explain to them, do you know that banks make mistakes? Sometimes they give you deposits that are not yours. Sometimes they take out that they're not entitled to take out.
Mm.
Should be looking at that. And they say, oh, no, banks, mistakes.
Right.
They're corporations.
Right. So, I look at that and it horrifies me. I mean, when I get my statement at the end of the month, I've got a folder with all my receipts in it. And I match them. And let me tell you, Bob, if they're 10 cents off, I'm calling the bank.
Yeah.
And I said to my friends, I said, imagine if, let's just say your phone company overbills everybody $2. Think about how much money they're making because you're not looking at your bill.
Yeah. It adds up. And it's amazing how many people just do not really want to look at that stuff. It's just, you know, it cramps their style. It, you know, they can't be free. You know, I think, you know, the one thing that I feel that is true about this country, and it's so good. We definitely do. There's a lot of entitlement of, I shouldn't really have to look at that. I should just be able to do and feel and live my life without all this, like, other stuff that is, like, noise.
Noise. It's your money. It's not noise. I look at it and I guess it is the way I was raised. But, you know, I've read so many money books, all kinds of money books, including yours. And yours is excellent, by the way. And certain things that I learned that I had to, you know, say, okay, I do that too. So now I have to correct that. Like before, when I used to get my statements from the bank, I would throw them on my desk and maybe 2 weeks later I would look at them. But I realized once when I did look 2 weeks later, there was like $1,000 mistake from my bank. And my bank, when I finally called them, they were like, what took you so long to call? But it took forever to get them to straighten out the mistake, which was a nightmare. But I can tell you when I get my statements now, I check them the same day.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That reminds two different stories. One, I had a client who they didn't look at their bank statements all year. And it turned out that they had been party to a fraud where this company fake billed for their product. It was an import business, and they had taken $35,000 out of the bank account. But when they went to the bank said 9 months later, if you had come to us when you discovered it 9 months later, we're not going to give you your money back.
Right.
You that ship has sailed.
Right.
You had a certain amount of time to give us and say this looks wrong, and we could have helped you, but the statement is gone, and she was just out that money. But I had another situation where we were working with a client. We do business management, and she would give us, let's say, $10,000 to pay off $20,000 worth of her bills. Mm-hmm. And each month she'd give us $10,000 and then ask us to pay off $20,000 of her bills. Well, about 4 months in, it wasn't going so well. We didn't have $20 to pay $20. We had $10 to pay $20. So she got so upset that her bills weren't coming down. And I said, well, you know, you're only giving us 10, you're asking us to pay 20 accumulatively over time. It doesn't work so well. So I did this amazing spreadsheet, explained everything. I sent it to her. I got a phone call. She said, don't you ever give me that kind of reality again. I don't need it.
Wow. Like you're the bad guy. Oh boy.
And yeah.
Well, yeah. I could top that one. I actually had a full grown-up tell me that she didn't file her taxes because it was optional. And I said, excuse me? And she says, yeah, I was told that paying taxes is optional.
Oh, nice.
And I said, if that was the case, no one would pay taxes. I said, are you kidding me? This person hadn't filed taxes in 10 years. And the sad part, when she finally hooked up with my CPA, she lost refunds because it was past the time.
Yeah.
So, and I know you cover the fear of the IRS in your book. I mean, why is it people are so afraid of the IRS?
Well, you know, it's funny. People think they're going to go to prison. A lot of people think they're going to go to prison. A lot of people think they have eyes in the back of their head and cameras in every room. And so people, and that they just, you know, want to catch people and throw them in jail or make them pay exorbitant amounts of money. And you know, some IRS agents love to play that game of intimidation. They do, for sure. But people, it's just amazing. There's just this, it's an irrational fear that they're going to be taken to prison if they did something wrong, even if they're doing nothing wrong. There was a story that they told us at one of the seminars. Every once in a while, if the IRS thinks that you're hiding lots and lots of money, they'll come around and they'll start knocking doors to try and find stuff out. And so they were, this particular person that they were after, they were knocking on the doors of neighbors. Well, the neighbor had been hiding money for about 10 years to the tune of a couple million dollars and was just living in fear that any day that the IRS was going to knock on their door. So the IRS knocks on their door to ask them about the neighbor, but they knock on the door and they say, hey, it's the IRS. And the person said, oh, my God, I did it, I did it. You found me, you found me. I took all the money, I'll pay it back.
Oh, my God.
Completely confessed before they even knew what the situation was because they were living in so much fear.
I wonder how many doors would give the IRS the same reaction. Let's get back to, you know, the money nerve. Your book talks about, and I think it talks to pretty much everybody. You don't leave anybody out. How do you react to your bills? How do you react to your statements? You know, the emotional reaction people have to, you know, I mean, for me, I have to tell you, I just saw my CPA yesterday to pick up my quarterly taxes. And every time I pick them up, I always remind them as if they don't know, I resent paying these taxes. You know? And my CPA says if I didn't have to pay taxes, I'd actually make a profit. But, you know, we all have our own little triggers, you know. I mean, you know, there's a part of me that says, yeah, if I could pay my taxes and say this is where I want my tax money to go, I'd probably be a lot happier. But, you know, you still got to do what you got to do living in this country. But a lot of people, when they get bills, they just stack them up, they hide them, they throw them away. What kind of emotions, you know, is it bringing up for them? How do they stop doing that?
Well, for a lot of people, it's overwhelming. And more, you know, the more mail they get, the more bills they get, it's more like somebody's throwing stones at them or just hitting them with, oh, my God, here's yet one more you didn't handle. Here's one more thing. And so I think a lot of people just get really overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And burying that stuff is a way of saying, you know what, it doesn't exist. I'm only going to deal with what I can deal with in the moment. And it's just a way of avoiding. The way that I think people have to start to make changes is by taking baby steps. You didn't get into debt overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight. For me, you've got to go from A to Z with all the steps in between. And a lot of people want to get from A to Z without doing the rest of the alphabet in between. Mm-hmm. It's baby steps. So when I work with people, I find out what's the most overwhelming or what's the least overwhelming and pick a couple of things that I know that I can have them work on that gives them some momentum. So that they can feel encouraged to keep going down this path. And then I also remind them it's not always going to be pleasant. They're going to be in their uncomfort zone and be willing to stick it out and work through the uncomfortableness.
Right. Well, what do you think about people that sabotage themselves all the time when money's concerned? They know they have a big, important bill due, and they go out shopping the week before and blow their money. Why would people do that?
Well, it's a couple reasons. One reason is this is my belief, and I've done a lot of different in psychology and workshops and stuff. I actually think a lot of times some of that sabotage is to prove to mommy and daddy that they were right. Dad said I didn't know how to handle the money, and I always ruined the deal at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And I pay homage to my dad, and I do exactly what he said I would do so that he gets to be right, and I'm a good kid by showing my dad that he's right about me. Mm-hmm. I do think there's some parental stuff in there, sabotaging or not sabotaging, to either prove or disprove what our parents say about us or what they said about us when we were younger. And then I also think that there's a lot of a fear about actually having success, and we sabotage it so that we don't have the success, so we don't have to deal with people saying, wow, don't you think you're so two-shoes? You're always able to take care of your bills. I find people will say to me when their business is going really well, or they just bought a new car, or they bought, you know, they remodeled their kitchen, or they bought a jacuzzi, something that they've been waiting for, that they'll downplay it. People say, oh, you got a new jacuzzi. Well, yeah, you know what? My cousin died, and it was some inheritance money that I wasn't expecting. I mean, I wouldn't really have this if it hadn't been for that horrible death. So it's really, I'm not that excited to have it because there was pain involved.
Right, so they feel guilty.
Feel guilty, yeah. So it's, you know, I didn't really buy the house. You know, my grandparents lent me the money, and then I had to take some money out of my 401k, and it was really stressful. So even though it looked like I have an amazing house, it really was a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. So it's not that great. You know, because when people are running around going, look at me, I'm amazing, I just bought a house, and I've got all my bills paid. People, oh, look at him.
Right. Well, you know, I can relate to that. You know, there are times where I've had a really good week, and I don't want to say it to my friends because I really don't want to hear their problems, and that's what they'll throw up
right.
at you. You know, you had a good week, they didn't, and, you know, you don't want to end up being hated or resented because you're doing well and they're not.
Exactly. And we have to learn to be able to celebrate our good stuff without negating that they're going through bad stuff, but we shouldn't have to small or turn the light down to make our friends feel better. We should be able to celebrate when we do great things for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when I tell people, hello, I put 15 years into this or 30 years
right.
into this, you know, most people think, you know, they're just going to show up for work, look good, and get paid, you know, a ridiculous amount of money for doing nothing. So you also have the
yeah.
people that are lazy and they don't have any stickability.
Right.
But they do tend to make you feel guilty. I have to tell you that. They can make you feel bad
yeah.
to where you don't want to say anything good is happening in your life.
Yeah, it's hard. It's about balance. I mean, I've done that. I don't, you know, oh my gosh, things are going really super well and I've got this going on and that's going on and then this just happened. I won't say a word. Because everybody else is, oh, you know, my dog's sick, I'm going to get thrown out of my apartment, I can really use a part-time job, does anybody want me to help them? I'd help you, I'll do anything because I'm desperate. I'm just okay, I'm fine.
Right, how you doing? I'm doing
never mind.
Okay. Right. Well, Bob, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about people's stories where money is concerned,
okay.
because I love the way you cover that in your book. So stay with us. Bob Wheeler and I will be right back.
I'm sure you're enjoying the information you're hearing on this episode of The Maria Heller Show, heard internationally at maria.net. Did you know that Maria does 4 shows a week and has over 1,000 hours of excellent informative shows on her site? Maria's been at this for years, and you get the benefit of the best education anywhere for a subscription of choice. Your subscription gives you total access to the entire site, the archives, and the new shows, all without any commercial interruptions, thanks to the show being supported by those who appreciate the truth. The site's available 24/7, and all the shows are downloadable for your favorite device. Enjoy the second half of this show and then come over to maria.net, that's M-E-R-I-A.net, and pick a subscription of your choice. It's a win-win for all of us. Now back to this excellent show.
Okay, welcome back. I'm speaking with Bob Wheeler, author of The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. And whether you admit it or not, trust me, we all have emotions where money is concerned. Check out his website, themoneynerve.com. There's a live link right here. Bob, I love that you cover, first of all, I love the fact your book is not huge. And you cover everything that people really need to be honest with themselves about. And you do give them a lot of suggestions on how to dig themselves out. But everybody has their own story. But what I find is people don't want to own their story. And do you want to explain what you mean? We mean by you have your story, especially when money's concerned.
Yeah, so a lot of us have a story. Our story might be, I'm always broke, I'm not good enough, I'm not capable of handling my finances, so I should never move forward and learn anything more because I'm stupid, don't deserve it, other people deserve it more. So we go through life with a story of, a lot of people go through the story of, I'm broke. So people will tell me how broke they are. Had to drive in the Mercedes today because the Jag was broken, and they're really broke, and they're on their last dime. And because, you know, I'll say to them, well, you know, if you were living in a hut on the Serengeti hunting for food, I might think that you are broke. Maybe not have a lot. But when you're sitting there in your, you know, with your three cars and your two homes, your kids are going to private school, and you've got eight flat screens of TVs around the house, and your six smartphones, you're not poor. Your cash flow may be a little tight, but you're not poor, and you're not broke. And so I really try to get people to become conscious of their stories, because once we can become conscious of them and be curious about our stories, we can then look at that story and say to ourselves, does that serve me today, and what's my payoff? What's my payoff always being broke in my story of being broke? Or what's my payoff in I'm too stupid to deal with numbers? Because maybe my payoff is I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to step into my leadership. I don't have to be a model to my children. I don't have to be responsible or accountable to my spouse. And maybe that comforts me. Maybe I don't want to change. And again, I'm not saying you have to change your story, but I think you have to get conscious of your story.
Own it.
And then you can make the choice of, do I want to continue down this path, or do I want to do something different?
Right. Well, then you have people that come up with fear of changing their path, changing their story, changing their career. You know, I'm sure you know tons of people that hate their jobs, bitch about it all the time, and dream about, you know, if I could, I'd do this or I'd do that. And then they just keep repeating that story.
Right. And then what I like to do with those people is say, do you want to change or do you want to keep your story? Because if you want to keep your story, then you don't need to work with me because you already got your story. If you want to do something different, I can offer some possibilities might help you shift that story, but only if you're willing. You've got to be willing, and you've got to have the intention that you're going to get into a space of vulnerableness. And if you're willing to do all that, I'll explore it with you, if you're willing to be curious. And a lot of times we'll say, yeah, actually, I am curious. I am terrified, and I'd like to learn more. And if I can get people to hook into they're making unconscious choices by holding on to their story, that they're still making a choice. And so now to make a conscious choice of something different, are they willing to, yes, step into the uncomfortableness of I'm going to have to take responsibility. I might have to learn more information. I might have to do homework. I might have to step into my own leadership. Those are going to be really uncomfortable. And showing them with baby steps how to just start to take little baby steps and, you know, feel good about that step and then go to the next step. Again, going from A to Z one at a time versus just jumping to the top of the alphabet.
Right, right. Well, you know, you also talk about the paycheck to paycheck mentality. And I can tell you that I know a lot of people that live paycheck to paycheck. I mean, they are literally one paycheck away from being on the street. And what I don't understand is those are the very same people that are always putting down the homeless or food stamps or whatever. But they don't realize that they're just one paycheck away from being on the street themselves.
Right.
So, you know, your book,
definitely,
right, your book advises, yeah, you know, to have at least 6 months of your bills in advance as an emergency fund. And I know, yeah, already, I could hear people saying it already. I don't make enough money to have 6 months worth of my bills in the bank. Can it be done?
And it can be done. Here's what I really encourage people to do. I'll tell them, why don't you just start saving $25? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, $25 doesn't do anything. And I say, well, $25 at least starts a new habit for you of making that commitment to do the $25.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I find is a lot of people will say to me, I'm going to start fund when I get my bonus.
Right.
Or I'm going to start that fund when I get this extra job. And I always say, you know what? It's never going to happen. I never see anybody run in and put that extra money in to get the bonus. Now they go, oh, I'm going to go add a room to my house. I'm going to go. They don't do it. And so don't wait to kickstart your fund. Just start putting in $25 and mm-hmm. put it into an internet bank somewhere that's not tied to your main bank account so that they can't transfer it back out to overcover, you know, to cover an overdraft.
Right.
And I get people to, you know, I really strongly suggest they go in once a week and look at that bank account and see that it went from 25 to 50, and now it's at 175. And a lot of times my clients will get excited and say, oh my gosh, 25 is not enough, I bump it to 40.
Hmm.
And then 40 is not enough, and then they bump it to 100. And they start to find that they can still live their lives and kill, and then they can put away 150 a week. And it takes a little bit of time, but once you start seeing some results
mm-hmm.
and you get this pattern going of a certain amount's going into this account,
right,
people start to be protective of that account and they start to want to get it a little bit higher, a little bit quicker, once they can actually see it.
Right, and then you don't want to ever spend it. You just want to keep it growing like you're at some pseudo casino watching your money grow.
Exactly. It's a slow slot machine. You win.
Right. You talk about a financial map, and I don't think, you know, and you call it, you know, GPS too, which is very clever. I don't think most people have ever heard of financial maps. Okay. I can honestly say I've never seen it written the way I've seen it in your book. Can you explain it?
Sure. So I talk about two different kinds of mapping. There's mental mapping and then financial mapping. And so for me, so mental mapping is my belief system is I'm broke, and that's the map I'm taking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm broke, I'm broke, I'm broke. That's one part of the equation. Then the other part of the equation is my financial map. So if I've decided my destination is New York from L.A., financial map is going to include my budget, the amount of money that I'm going to need to L.A. to New York. Am I going to have to rent a car? Am I going to buy a pony? Am I going to fly on an airplane? And it starts to take all the financial components of what I'm going to need to take me on my journey. A good example, I had somebody who was going to go, who was going on this big camping trip family. One of my clients, and they were so excited. They had budgeted out it was going to be, you know, $700 for them to get to the camp and do their thing. But what they hadn't budgeted was that it was going to take them 3 days to drive there.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't budgeted the gas, and then they hadn't budgeted that they had to have three hotel rooms for the 3 nights that they were on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So they're completely shot because they were only focusing on, well, when I get there, I'm going to need this much money.
Right.
But not how am I going to get there and how am I going to get home.
Mm-hmm.
So that financial map really starts to lay out the numbers so that instead of having a mental map that says I'm broke, my mental map says I want to own a house. I want to develop a music studio. I want to be a carpenter, whatever the same be, the mental map is fueled by the financial map because you start to lay out all the tools financially of what it's going to take to get you on your mental map so that your mental and your financial map will then guide you. They're sort of your GPS to get you to the vision that you want. And the reason I use GPS is because GPS, you still have to keep monitoring where it's taking you, because sometimes the GPS makes a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just put it on autopilot and then say, I don't have to do anything more. No, I have to interact with with my goals and with my budget so that I can make sure that my GPS hasn't taken me off course. Mm-hmm. I want to stay the course. It's, you know, a GPS is great, but it's a tool. And we still have to be in charge of the vehicle mm-hmm. or our financial vehicle. We still have to participate. And that's where a lot of people don't want to, that's where people want to check out because mm-hmm. they don't want to have to do participating. The thing about money is it's a relationship you have until you transition into your next life. So you don't get to just figure it out today and then you never have to work on it again.
Right.
It's a relationship that's ongoing
mm-hmm.
and changing. And a lot of people, that's...
Right. You talk about, too, having a contingency plan. And I know a lot of people don't, but I know a lot of people that do. How can somebody set up a contingency plan? You know, some people wake up one day and they, you know, I'm going to be a rocket scientist and I'm going to make X amount of money, and they don't have any other plan in case that doesn't work out.
Right. And it's you know, it's a, that's why it's really important to evaluate and see, you know, if, you know, I'm not tall enough to be a basketball player in the NFL. If my only goal was to be a basketball player in the NFL, I'm not going to hit my goal.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And but I can look and say, well, you know what? I love being in the NFL. Maybe I could be a scorekeeper. Maybe I could work for a team. How do I get myself involved in something that I'm passionate about, even if I can't be the player on the court? And you know, be realistic in or like dream big, and then also be realistic in how to make that happen.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, today, and I mean, I'm sure you're aware of it. Today, a lot of people are stuck. They feel stuck in the jobs they have. They're afraid to ask for a raise. They could, you know, society's convinced you just shut up, be glad you have any job. And of course,
right.
people are miserable and right. they need to make more money than they are. You know, I had a news report that said the global economy is at the worst point now in 200 years as far as the global economy.
Yeah.
What can people do to get more money on their job or change jobs? Because
so,
you do have a lot of suggestions in the book on that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really important, if someone out there feels that they're being underpaid on the job, I think the first thing to do is actually do an inventory of what you bring to that job. Whether it's, even if it's the little, I always change the water bottle, you know, by the copier. I am friendly with all the people. I know everybody's names. I am first one there every morning, and I always put in 3 hours of overtime, and I've never said no when people ask me to do this. I am responsible for this, 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 and this. And you list all that out. Because sometimes your manager or your boss above you doesn't realize you're doing all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for you to go in and say, look how amazing I am. I didn't even know how amazing I was until I actually listed down all my things that I do for you guys. Look, I think I deserve a raise. The thing you can do is go in and say, hey, listen, I want to do more. I want to feel more challenged. Can you help me in finding ways to be more of a contribution to this company? Because I'm invested in this company. This is where I want to be. So how can I be the best I can be, and how can you help guide me? So enlist their support. Versus, you don't give me enough, or you don't believe in me, you know, make it a team effort.
Right.
And that will really help people start to say, oh my gosh, I didn't, you know, I just sort of took it for granted that you do the things. It didn't even, yeah, I forgot. Or, you know, if you speak bilingual, hey, by the way, I'm the one that translates all the letters, and I'm the one doing this and
right.
that, and I don't get paid for that. Oh, that's right. We really rely on your bilingual skills. And really just laying all that out there. The other thing is sometimes you're at a job where you don't want to be. And if you come in late, if you sort of whatever, I just the minimum so I get my paycheck, you're not really going to get a raise there because you're not even seeing your energy there. Because you're wishing you were somewhere else. Look, if you're at a job you don't want to be at least give them what they pay you for and try to find another job outside of work that'll start to fuel your passion. Or, you know, I've had clients that want to start their own business and they can't quite leave the steady paycheck, so we work out a 2-year plan or a 3-year plan, and they'll keep working at the job that they have, which is just a job to give them the money to do what they want. It's not their passion. Mm. It's just a job that's going to pay the bills to help them make the transition into their passion. And then we just slowly transition them over to where they're no longer needing that check, and then they take that leap of, I'm leaving that behind. It served me, and I'm ready to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But don't hate the job that's helping you get to your other passion.
Right. Just look at it as a means to the end.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
exactly.
Just have a plan. And I think that's part of the problem. A lot of people don't have a plan. And then they seem like they're surprised when everything crashes and burns.
Right.
You know, I love when you talk about words, okay, and how mm-hmm. people are constantly using the word but. And I love the way you say to switch out that word but with the word and.
Right.
So it kind of takes a person back into action. Do you want to explain that a little?
Absolutely. Yes. For me, using the word but negates. So if I say that I want to be really rich, but I'm afraid, the word but tells me that I can't be rich because I'm afraid.
Right.
I change the languaging and say, I want to be wealthy and I'm afraid of success. It allows both of them to coexist in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we can allow the coexistence of things that seem opposite, the more we can actually move into being a reality. Because there are many people that are wealthy and have fear. They can coexist. People love to use the word but. And sometimes that word is appropriate. It's just that I really work to not incorporate into my languaging. I also, that is a big word for me. And then just the words that we choose are so important. I had a friend who would always say, I'm sorry for any
That really grinds on my nerves. I know. I'm like, you didn't do anything wrong.
Right?
Why are you saying I'm sorry?
But we all have people like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
You want to say you're not responsible. I'm so sorry for that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take on the responsibility. I'm sorry. You want to just scream. And I really should give her grief because she was being so sorry for everything. And then she finally realized she wasn't really sorry, but she was just uncomfortable in the situation. She just didn't have an alternate language, another option.
Mm.
And so I find when I'm in certain situations where I only have one response, I know then that I need to find 2 or 3 other options so that I can change my languaging instead of staying in my story with my one stock answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really work with people to be conscious of, are you broke or are you just having a temporary cash flow, liquidity ish?
Mm-hmm.
Are you really going to die if you don't get that brand new car, or is it just something that you're really passionate about? People say, oh, I'm just going to die if I can't have that.
Right. Well, I agree. I mean, I correct people all the time when they're saying crazy things like that. You know, I immediately say, what are you putting out in the universe now? You know, and it just seems that they're thinking, it starts out with bad thinking. Then they actually verbalize the bad thinking. And then they feel like they were the biggest prophet on earth because exactly what they are thinking and creating happens.
Exactly. And, That's because I do also find that people like to be right. So if I want to believe that I'm going to have a doomsday and then I get to be right.
Right.
The universe is horrible and I just proved it again.
Right. This stuff always happens to me. I hear that a lot too, believe me.
Right. And they're always looking for validation to prove again and again how woe is me. And so if we can start our mindset off with changing the languaging to, this is going to be an amazing day regardless of how much or how little is in my bank account.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have fantastic relationships with people today. I'm so excited to be alive. looking forward to building up a savings account so 2 years from now I can have my Uzi. I'm on a plan. I've got things focused, and I'm working down my list versus, oh, everything bad happens to me. I can't have that.
Right.
Well, other people get more things than I do.
Absolutely. Bob, I have to totally agree with you, and I want to thank you for joining me today. And
absolutely.
You know, there's so much people can do. I'm so happy you put it in such simple language and such an easy book. I want to thank you again for joining me, because money is a big issue and it doesn't have to be. So thanks, Bob.
Absolutely.
Take care.
It's been my pleasure. I paid it.
Same here. Take care. Bob.
You take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Robert Wheeler, CPA, The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. And if you don't think you have emotions where money is concerned, change your story, because we all do. Anyway, you can check out his work at the website, themoneynerve.com. Tomorrow I'll be back with the news, and I'm sure you've seen that my Monday news show was way ahead of mass media news on a certain story, which I'll tell you about tomorrow. So I want to thank you guys for supporting my show, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.